Be reading from Thomas Pynchon's Vineland, pages 116 to 118. This is the scene where D.L. and Farnese first meet. What she found was Farnese, who'd been out with her camera and a bag full of bootlegged ECO stock since dawn, finally ending up on Telegraph Avenue, filming a skirmish line of paramilitary coming up the street in riot gear, carrying small, and she hoped only rubber, bullet-firing rifles. Last time she looked, she'd been at the front edge of a crowd who were slowly retreating from the campus, trashing what they could as they went. When the film roll ended and she came up out of the safety of her viewfinder, Farnese was alone, halfway between the people and the police, with no side street handy to go dodging down. Shop doors were all secured with chain, windows shuttered over with heavy plywood. Her next step would have been just to go ahead and change roles, get some more footage. But to go rooting around in her bag right now could only be taken as a threat by the boys in khaki, who'd come close enough that even above the lingering nose-wrenching brown note of tear gas, she could still begin to smell them. The aftershave, the gunmetal in the sun, the new-issue uniforms whose armpits by now are musky with fear. "Oh, I need Superman," she prayed. "Tarzan on that vine." The basic stone bowel flash had come and gone about the time D.L. showed up. All in black, including helmet and face shield, riding her esteemed and bad red and silver Czech motorcycle, the Che Zed, over-designed in every part, up onto which she gathered Farnese out of danger, camera, miniskirt, equipment bags and all, and carried her away. Skidding among piles of street debris and paper fires, over crumbled auto glass, trying not to hit anybody lying on the pavement, up onto some sidewalk and around the corner at last, and down the long hillside to the bay, flashing in the late sun, they escaped, in a snarling dream rush of speed and scent. With her bare thighs, Farnese gripped the leather hips of her benefactor, finding that she'd also pressed her face against the fragrant leather back. She never thought it might be a woman she hugged this way. Biker rapture, for sure. They sat devouring cheeseburgers, fries, and shakes in a waterfront place full of refugees from the fighting up the hill. All their eyes, including ones that had wept, now lighted from the inside. Was it only the overhead fluorescence, some trick of sun and water outside? No. Too many of these fevered lamps not to have origin across the line somewhere, in a world sprung new, not even defined yet, worth the loss of nearly everything in this one. The jukebox played The Doors, Jimi Hendrix, Jefferson Airplane, Country Joe, and The Fish. D.L. had taken off the helmet and shaken out her hair, which lit up in this approaching orange sunset like a comet. Farnese, jittery, starving, and gaga, all at once, was still trying to figure it out. "Somebody sent you, right?" "Cruising through is all. You sure sound paranoid." Farnese gestured with her burger, trailing drops of separating ketchup and fat, each drop warped by the forces of its flight onto swirling micro-patterns of red and beige, and, "It's the revolution, girl, can't you feel it?" D.L. narrowed her eyes, wondering, "What have we here?" She felt like an adult come upon a little kid alone at a dangerous time of day, not yet aware of her mother's absence. "I could see you were just all revved up," she told Farnese, though months later. "I couldn't help teasing you. You were being so..." But let it go, pretending she couldn't think of the word. It probably wasn't revolutionary, invoked in those days widely, and sometimes lovingly, and enjoying a wide range of meaning. Farnese dreamed of a mysterious people's oneness, drawing together toward the best chances of light, achieved once or twice that she'd seen in the street. In short, timeless bursts, all paths, human and projectile, true, the people in a single presence, the police, likewise simple as a moving blade, and individuals who in meetings might only bore or be pains in the ass here, suddenly being seen to transcend, almost beyond will, to move smoothly between baton and victim, to take the blow instead, to lie down on the tracks as the iron rolled in, or look into the gun muzzle and maintain the power of speech. There was no telling in those days who might unexpectedly change this way or when. Some were in it, in fact, secretly, for the possibilities of finding just such moments. But D.L. admitted she was a little less saintly. "Is the ass-kicking parts usually what I'm looking for?" Watching Farnese, waiting for disapproval. "But somebody told me it don't mean much unless I make what they call the correct analysis, and then act on it. Ever hear of that one?" Farnese shrugged. "Heard of it. Maybe I don't have the patience. I have to trust the way this makes me feel. Feels right, D.L., like we're really going to change the world this time." looking back in the same go ahead, say something way. But D.L. was smiling lopsidedly to herself. Backlit by the last of the sun, for Nessie in dazed witness, her face had become possessed by that of a young man, distant, surmised, Moody Chastain, her father. Later, when they got to showing each other pictures of their lives, there he was, same face in silver and dye, confirming the earlier gleaming moment, the halo of fresh-drawn copper, the ghostly young hero who'd come to her rescue, the whoop-de-doo that day, revolution all around them, world-class burgers, jukebox solidarity. As the sun set behind Marin, and the scent of DL's sweat and pussy excitation diffused out of the leather clothing, mixed with motor smells.